So, right, guys. So I'll get started, and then if anybody joins, they can join in. So, kind of today, as you guys will have seen, today's very much around building grit, discipline, and endurance. And as you guys know me well enough by now, kind of what I like to delve in our course, because you get a lot of the practical application stuff from Gavin in regards to the programming, the exercise execution, in regards to the deadlifts with Fudge, and then more the nutrition and the supplementation from Greg. I like to run down the route of what's happening inside. So for me, it's very much around kind of understanding how our body responds, and most importantly, how our brain responds to certain adversities and those sort of things. So today's very much around grit and discipline, and kind of how we manage that. So I'm just going to load my screen. So just give me a second and then we'll get started. So that I need to mute. So yeah, today again, the title is Building Grit, Discipline and Endurance. So our goals today, or our learning aim, shall we say, we're going to look at something called the window of tolerance. We're going to and understand essentially the science behind mental toughness and what's going on with our brain when we're having, how do we facilitate kind of giving ourselves the best opportunity to face adversity. We're going to talk a little bit about how to build grit, and is it actually possible from a physiology and a psych physical standpoint. We're going to look at discipline in regards to the systems and motivation around discipline and understanding exactly what it is, the role of endurance and mitochondrial function in resilience. Then we're going to look at the pillars of resilience, which you guys well know well enough by now, but just adding a couple onto those in how it interacts with grit and discipline and endurance alongside some high performance protocols. And then we're going to finish off with just a little bit of a round table where you get the opportunity to ask questions and just make sure that we kind of understand it to the best of my intentions. So moving straight into the first slide. So kind of the science behind what I'm going to talk about today is very much kind of based around theory. So there's a theory that's done the rounds, and kind of it's used a lot in kind of trauma therapy, somatic therapy, and also nervous system regulation practices. It was first introduced by a chap called Dr. Dan Siegel, who was a clinical professor of psychiatry. So it's basically a neuroscience concept and a trauma psychology concept that describes our optimal zone of arousal. So those of you that have heard Ben speak, Ben talks a lot about controlling your arousal state, and this is what he's talking about. Okay, so the window of tolerance itself is essentially the mental, emotional, and physiological zone where you as an individual feel safe, calm, and most importantly, you're capable of processing stimuli and your emotions in a manageable way. So when you're within this window, shall we say, kind of you have the ability to think clearly, make rational decisions, connect with others, and most importantly, kind of handle stress and emotions without becoming overwhelmed. So most of you listening to this call or on this call, we are all guilty of sometimes procrastinating and becoming overwhelmed with the magnitude of certain tasks, sometimes small tasks, sometimes big tasks. So kind of when we're outside this window, when we're inside this window of tolerance, sorry, we just have the ability to handle these emotions without it kind of leading down a slippery slope to kind of things that we don't want it to. So you've heard me speak before about kind of the compounding effect. You get up in the morning. First, you're late. You miss your alarm, you snooze your alarm, you get out of bed, you stub your toe. You go downstairs, you go to make a coffee, you end up spilling the coffee all over the worktop. Obviously, I'm a guy that hasn't got a coffee machine, so you coffee machine buffs listening to this, I know you don't have to spoon the coffee in, but I do. I'm old school like that. But yeah, it's a kind of a almost a compounding effect of when one bad thing happens, it remunerates. So what we're trying to do is kind of catch that. Okay, so for me, it's understanding what happens outside the window. So typically when you as an individual leave the window, leave this kind of window of tolerance due to any sort of old triggers. So remember when we, I'm using the word trauma in the loosest sense, okay? But things like trauma triggers of those of you that have heard me speak before, talking about early childhood, early adulthood, triggers from there, overwhelming stress. What will happen is you're gonna experience dysregulation, okay? Specifically, nervous system dysregulation in pretty much two ways. So you guys have heard the fight or flight mode, right? So this is exactly what we're talking about. So the two kind of ways that we can experience this is, first of all, hyperarousal, which is your fight or flight. So that's when you have tremendous sympathetic nervous system activation. Okay, so the signs of this can be things like anxiety and panic, anger and rage, racing thoughts, being hypervigilant, and physical tension. So they're all typical characteristics of when you're outside of this window and you're in a hyperarousal state. Then we have the opposite to that, which is your freeze or freeze or shutdown mode, which is your hypoarousal state. So this is more parasympathetic base and dorsal vagal response. So signs of this can be typically numbness or disassociation, depression or fatigue, feeling disconnected, and lack of motivation of energy. So these are typically things that we'll experience when we're outside this window of tolerance that I'm speaking about. So if we can understand and catch ourselves, okay, then this is going to be the most important thing to our goal when, and as I said earlier, when you hear Ben speak about being controlling your arousal state, this is what we're talking about. So people that have suffered from any sorts of type of trauma or psychological stress will typically have a narrow window, a smaller or a narrow window, meaning that you will be easily, more easily thrown into kind of a hyper or the hyperarousal state by everyday stress. So even the smallest of things can trigger you. And we've all been there, right? We've all been there with just the littlest things that's kind of sent us off a cliff. And this is an example of exemplification of kind of that window being very small. So what can we do to kind of widen this window and kind of improve the kind of depth of this window so we have a greater tolerance? Things we can do are things like somatic practices, things like mindfulness, breath work. Things like polyvagal theory informed interventions and those sort of things. But most importantly, the simplest use of these sort of things is going to be your somatic practices, your mindfulness and breath work. If we go a deeper into the kind of therapy route, if there is some long lasting, and for those of you that have potentially had or been around therapy before, typically EMDR is sometimes used. So EMDR, for you, those of you guys that don't know, is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, and also kind of somatic experiencing. So somatic experiencing is slightly different. Okay, so that's typically a form of therapy that focuses on resolving the effects of trauma by addressing the body's physical sensations and responses. So that's a deeper level, but what I'd like us to focus on around kind of this window, shall we say, is again being able to calm that nervous system when you're heightened, but also in the opposite direction when you're that nervous system is low and we're over parasympathetic. So going into a workout, we want to drive sympathetic response. So it's our ability to be flexible around these systems, which is going to help massively when it comes to things like grit, discipline, and endurance. Okay, so what can the practical uses of that? So kind of, or for you guys to actually execute, kind of, it's the first thing is being able to understand and feel when you're moving out of that window. Okay. I talk to people all the time and I talk to my clients about this is through life, whether it comes to nutrition, training, or any of your other areas of your life, things are going to happen to disrupt the system. Things are going to happen that are out of your control and things aren't going to be perfect. And I use the phrase, it's not falling off a horse because everybody's going to do it. It's how quickly can you get back on and how quickly can we notice when you're not in that window. We can also build self-regulation tools to stay within that return to window. So you've heard Ben speak about recently operating systems. So can we create systems from a self-regulation standpoint to use an operating system when we know we're entering a stressful situation, which could be work-induced, it could be going to see certain members of family, for instance, all little things. Can we create an operating system and how we react and respond in those situations and understand when we're kind of falling out of that window? And most importantly, is kind of lifestyle strategies. So things like sleep, exercise, also social connection. They're all going to support that nervous system resilience. And when you're looking at a lot of the research around longevity at the moment, we're seeing a lot of kind of things come out, but social interaction and social connection is moving up the list of things that are very important from a longevity standpoint as well. So they're just a few things that we can do. Most importantly, kind of using that window of tolerance, but how do we kind of acknowledge it and get out of it? So moving into the second part, which again, you guys know I love the brain, is we're going to talk a little bit about the science behind mental toughness. So the two areas that I want us to focus on, similar to my last talk, kind of, and those of you guys that have listened to it, it's understanding the parts of the brain that are responsible for certain thoughts, right? So the two parts of the brain that we're focusing on again tonight, similar to my last talk, is the prefrontal cortex and the limbic system. Both of these areas are central to developing grit and discipline, but they also play totally different roles. Often, typically, in a kind of with tension with each other. So, kind of typically, the prefrontal cortex is going to govern long-term vision and decision making, whereas the limbic system will quite often drive comfort seeking, impulse, and instant gratification. Okay. So, if we wanted to kind of typify grit, we can see that grit would kind of equate to a consistent activation of something like the prefrontal cortex in times and areas of discomfort. Okay, so that would probably loosely define grit within these two sections of the brain. Then we can look at neuroplasticity, and we understand that the brain's ability to change is it's quite amazing. So kind of its ability to rewire with things like repeated exposure to challenge is going to be important. So exposure to the discomfort and the uncomfortable times is paramount to growth and being able to change kind of the rewiring sections of your brain. So for me, resilience kind of is not avoiding stress, but being aware and being in pursuit of adapting to the stress. So quite a lot of people will run and they'll try and flee something that feels uncomfortable. But kind of, I'm a big believer in anything in life that's tough is walk into it. Walk into it, challenge yourself, do the hard stuff, because that's where it'll elicit the greatest response when we're talking about change. And when we're looking at kind of first order and second order change and the deep internal change, that's where it comes from. It's quite often proving yourself wrong psychologically. I talk to clients all the time about this, about the importance of the only thing stopping you from achieving your goals is your brain. The only thing you stopping you from doing the difficult task is yourself. So kind of try to walk into the fear, walk into the challenge, and you'd be surprised at what you're actually capable of. So look, going back to the prefrontal cortex, it's typically the, if we want to call it anything, the control center for discipline. Okay, it's the most evolved part of the human brain. As we can see here, it's located at the front, just behind the forehead. And as you've heard in my last, to again reinforce what I spoke about in the last thing, some of the executive functions of it are things like planning, decision making, goal setting, things like impulse control, emotional regulation, self-awareness, and future planning, future thinking. So what its role in discipline and grit will typically be is it's going to help you override those short-term impulses from the limbic system. Okay, so things like eating junk food, skipping workouts, it's going to support delayed gratification, which is going to be one of the big key traits in discipline. So we're working now for the long-term rewards and not working now for something that we're going to achieve today, if that makes sense. And it's going to enable quite often goal persistence. So planning, evaluating progress. And staying focused even when the motivation dips, because we've got that kind of almost tunnel vision of the end goal, as opposed to just navigating through the day to day. So typically when you feel like skipping the gym and you actually make it, it will be the prefrontal cortex that reminds you of your long-term goals and helps you follow through. Then we move into the limbic system, which, if we're going to call the PFC, the control center, the limbic system's more the emotional engine. Okay, so particularly areas mentioned before, like the amygdala. Okay, and from a couple of presentations ago, the nucleus accumbens. It's typically involved in emotional processing, especially the emotions around fear, pleasure, and reward. Okay, things like motivation and reinforcement, and also the fight and flight responses. So its role and responsibility when it comes to things like discipline and grit, it can typically trigger an emotional reactivity that makes discipline harder. So our ability to seek comfort and, as I said to you a second ago, avoid discomfort. So when you try and shy away from uncomfortable conversations, meetings, and those sort of things, it will typically be the limbic system that's creating that. Okay. So kind of for me, if we understand what is our brain telling us and in every situation and circumstance in life, positive and negatives, what's going on internally, because it's a big player in the game. Okay, but that being said, when aligned, the limbic system can actually fuel motivation, especially and particularly through things like reward anticipation and also emotional connection to goals. So for me, the emotional payoff you can imagine for completing a challenge, like pride or joy or those sort of things, is typically limbic driven and can enhance your grit if you channel it in the right direction, as opposed to kind of shying away, a kind of avoiding that discomfort and kind of seeking the comfortable avenue. We can actually use the limbic system to our advantage. So understanding those two parts of your brain alongside the kind of window of tolerance theory kind of gives you a little bit of an in-depth look at the science behind what's going on when it comes to determination and grit. And again, tagging on to everything I've been speaking about in my last two talks, the importance of the brain, the importance of mindset, of thoughts, and how our biggest hurdle to get over in life from achieving, whether it be success financially, from a family perspective, personally, physical, or professional, it's within your control because it all stems from inside your own head, your thoughts, your beliefs, your drive, your determination, and what kind and our ability to kind of control that arousal state. So for me, that's what gave me power. Like when I talk to my son or when I talk to my clients, kind of it's believing the possible is possible and understanding that you are the master regulator to everything in your life, and you are the key holder to everything that does and doesn't happen, everything good and bad that does happen. Again, that's down to you, and it's more so your reaction. And we can't control anything external of our environment, but what we can control is our thoughts, our actions, our intentions, and all those sort of things, which I believe in this journey that you guys are on is going to be particularly powerful. And once you create autonomy and you kind of start to take control, you become a different animal. And you do, I might be over-exaggerating, but kind of you become unstoppable because you're so purpose-driven, but you're in control of everything that happens. There's nothing that gets to you. Poise, control, and just. You're a different animal. and kind of just having that ability to flip between the systems and understand and acknowledge and do things differently to what you, it doesn't matter how old you are either, what you doing things different to you've previously done is such a powerful thing and signifies true change. When I talk about transformation, it's very multifaceted. Yes, I get people in amazing shape. Okay, but that's only part of a transformation. If I always say to all my guys, we're going to get you in shape, but I want you to get in shape, be the best father, husband, friend, colleague, employer, employee that you can be as well. So the word transformation is very multifaceted. So moving on to something like grit. So is grit trainable? So you'll see a example at the top there. Grit equals passion plus perseverance for long-term goals. Well-known psychologist called Angela Duckworth and her team created this, and kind of they've done a lot of research around grit as potentially it being a trait in the human body. So, is this trainable? In my opinion, yes. And preceding that statement, there's a few things that I think as men we can focus on to start to train that. So, the first one, pursue purpose over motivation. So for me, I've been in areas of my life where I've chased the wrong things. Okay. So it's important as we get older, we learn. Okay. And we choose goals that are personally meaningful, not just things that externally validate us. And kind of there's certain parts of life that need to happen, obviously, kind of monetary and those sort of things. But you perform at your best and you're most grounded when you're working towards goals that are personally meaningful, and they're not just something from a validation standpoint or something you think is going to make you feel better. And this all stems back to the mindset element and why I'm so important in understanding who you are. And as Ben often talks about your values and going back to your core values and kind of what do you stand for? What are your highest values in life, and are you living according to those? So it's pursuing purpose over motivation. Growth mindset. So I talk a lot on my slides about growth and fixed mindset. So, what is a growth mindset? I always typify it as internal dialogue. So, those of you that have heard me speak, I don't entertain the word I can't. Can't is not a word for me. It's not something that I want from an internal dialogue. I want to hear. My son will always tell you that that word was banned in our house when he was a lot younger, because there's no such thing as I can't. You could tip, rehash it as I can't yet. I don't even like that. It's a case of you can do anything you want to, but sometimes it takes time. So kind of understanding a growth mindset is exploring the area of possibility and knowing as a human, kind of we believe our area of possibility is this circle here. But if over that circle, there's a whole massive area of unused exponential potential. And people very rarely in this life tap into that because we have a belief system of our area of potential, but the underutilized area of potential is huge. So, kind of how you speak to yourself and understanding what words to and not to use from an internal dialogue to that subconscious and that conscious mind is super important. So building a growth mindset, it's embracing challenges and failure as feedback, not signs to quit. I always say there is no kind of winning and losing. There's no success and failure. Failure doesn't exist. There's success and lessons. And as somebody that's learned from some of the hardest challenges in his life, I can stand on my shield and say that there is nothing that you cannot beat. There's nothing that you cannot beat. And just taking that into every experience, good or bad, and understanding the bad situations that you encounter, it's all put there for you to understand, learn a lesson, and strategize one, how to get out of it, and two, to ensure you're not put in that position again. The third one there is practice deliberately and not just repetitively. So, as I said a second ago in the previous slide, it's focusing on the uncomfortable. Focus and be hyper-focused on the areas that you know are an area of weakness for you and go there and go there. Challenge yourself there. You're only as strong as your weakest link. So setting micro goals in that area. Again, it might be kind of, let's say, let's use an exercise. You may kind of be terrible at squats, for instance. But we know typically that'll probably be something to do with some strength discrepancies, potentially some mobility or biomechanical or structural issues. Go and solve them. So essentially, kind of be intentional with everything you do. Okay. Repetition without intention is fruitless because just going through the motions, in some areas, it's important to, when we're looking at operating systems, to run into autopilot. But things that are kind of meaningful to you, be intentional in everything you talk, how you speak, how you carry yourself, how you dress, how you're received by others. Be intentional with everything in your life. We know that grit is going to grow through consistent wins. Okay, delay gratification. We spoke a little about that on the previous slide. So I want us to be able to kind of train your ability to resist immediate comfort and favor those long-term rewards. Celebrate successes, celebrate those small wins for sure. But celebrate and give yourself a pat on the back and be happy with the progress you've made. But what's next? Be inquisitive, drive determination to kind of continue in the next goal. And I try to kind of, if money is obviously the monetary element is one of your highest values, then yes, you're chasing the next thing, but it's understanding the things that you are chasing, are they linear with your values and who you are as well? So going back to that first point of pursue purpose, it's continuing that. With the daily gratification, you can look at temptation bundling. So as an example, only listen to podcasts while you're working out. For instance, time blocking, you've heard me speak about before for high effort tasks and working in smaller blocks to make sure you get certain tasks done. Again, delaying gratification can help improve kind of grit and determination. Commit to consistency. So setting non-negotiable habits, they're all on your tracker. You have 5 to 7. That's a great tool to use to create consistency in the levers and the areas that you openly aren't as strong with. And I wouldn't say not good at, because nobody's not good at things. It's even a lack of interest or it's not high priority. I always say on computers, I'm a bit of a technophobe. I'm not, and social media is an example. Oh, I'm not very good at social media. No, I'm not ma a massive fan of social media. That's it. If I needed to, I could do whatever's necessary to become very good at social media, but I just haven't got a massive vested interest in social media. So people often kind of will say they're not good at something. But again, I often think it's either they don't have a passion for it, or they just, it's just something that they just don't want to do. And it's not high up on the list of values as well. So for me, things like non-negotiables, one of the biggest things you can do is show up every day in whichever area of life you struggle to show up. Okay. Especially on the bad days, your grit is going to be forged in the follow through. Okay. And what you get from that. I had a conversation with a client last week about kind of, he was talking about dangerous situation when he was out with his friends, because obviously typical out with the boys, it always involves drinking, beers, food, and those sort of things. And he says, oh, I'm just not going to go. And I said to him, no, I want you to go. I want you to put yourself in that position. But what I also want you to do is refuse the beers, eat before you go, and kind of practice kind of putting yourself in that uncomfortable position where your mates might take the mickey out of you. There might be a few jeers and some kind of snidey comments, but that's okay. That position of uncomfortability is going to help you grow to be able to resist the challenges, because this is not the first and the last time you're going to go out with the boys. You can't just stop seeing your friends. You can't abstain from everything during this process. We need to build new operating systems. So pushing yourself into those environments is super important. And then off the back of that point, kind of one thing that I didn't put in there is surround yourself with gritty people. Okay, you guys are part of an amazing community here where hopefully you feel inspired. Seeing TK's message earlier on, just before on this call, it pumped me up. It's a 11:30 p.m. here. Seeing him kind of stack that rack, it generally kind of pumped me up ready for this call, because I was hoping it was on and he was first one on. So for me, kind of you're surrounded by excellence here. Going back to the point of the client I was talking to around the friends, is I've said to him over time, one thing's going to happen. Your friends are going to accept your choice, or you're going to drift away because they make you feel uncomfortable and they're going to continue kind of pulling your leg about it. And that's when you ask yourself the question, are these the circles that I really want to be spending most of my time in? Do these guys inspire me? Do they make me a better person? And they're the hard decisions. After being someone that's been in a few different friendship groups and walked away from friendship groups, it's hard. But in the long run, it serves you. It serves you because it was what was best for me. So it's understanding, surround yourself with excellence. My view is if you're the smartest person in the room, and I forget who said it, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. Okay, hunt for that room where you feel incapable, where you feel overwhelmed, where you're like, oh my God, all these people are so smart. Put yourself in that room because you're going to learn the most. But a lot of people don't enter those rooms. They're scared to go there because, again, going back, that's typically your limbic system. But if we can program that to put yourself in that room and put yourself out there, those of you guys that have been to Costa Rica or been to any of the camps that have run, it's scary going out there. You don't know who you're going to meet. That comparative element of you is always there. But there's not one person that have come on the camps that have regretted it because they've grown, because they've surrounded themselves around amazing individuals that are all on the same journey and on totally different parts of the path. Okay. Penultimate one is kind of training your mind of the stress. So practices like breath work, so your box breathing and anything kind of breath work related, so your Wim Hof stuff and those sort of things like cold exposure, mental toughness drills. So in your workouts, okay, finish your set, even if you feel like you've got nothing left in the tank, go for that last rep. As long as you're safe, I don't want you being crushed under a bench press on my advice. But go for that extra rep. When you feel like you're done, mentally say to yourself, I'm doing one more. A key question to ask yourself when you're reaching the depths of a hard set is, can I do one more? If the answer to that question is yes, do one more. Get to the top of the rep. Can I do one more? Yes. Fail under an exercise. As long as form stays true and kind of we're looking after kind of execution, fail in your sets. So many people that I train with or watch train in the gyms that I train at, they don't fail in a set. They get to a certain number of reps and they're like, yes, I've got my eight. Like, take yourself there. That's going to build fortitude and mental toughness by taking yourself past that belief system you have of kind of when you're done. Okay. And then the last one is embrace discomfort regularly. So, things that we can do to embrace comfort regularly from a physical standpoint, as I said to you earlier, cold showers, things like sauna, even fasting. I find fasting very hard, but every so often I will fast because of the benefits of a lot of other things, kind of the research around kind of things like cancers and those sort of things. So, I fast very infrequently, but I hate it. But I do it because I know it's hard and I find it difficult. I love food. I'm on a lot of calories, but I fast because it's difficult. Endurance activities kind of condition your body to handle stress. Train hard, train consistently, sorry. So, like you guys are doing at the moment, stick to a progressive strength or conditioning program. Those of you that have done the mass intervals and eight intervals, they're terrible. They're so difficult, but you get through them, right? And you get better. So that's what we're talking about, training grit. Okay. I mentioned about training hard when you don't want to. And going into what I'd loosely describe as purposeful failure. So go for that last rep, even if you know it's not there, go there because you never know. You might get half a rep this week, then you get a full rep next week. And that's how we kind of break those barriers down that hold us back. And remember, it's all in here. It's not anywhere else. I always say when I train clients, why is it if Ben or Gav or myself was with you in the gym, we're probably able to add every exercise that you're doing right now in the gym, in your current program, we'd be able to get probably 2 to 5 more reps out of you. Some of you guys probably a little bit more, 2 to 5 more reps out of you if we were stood in your presence. Why is that? Where's the limitation? It's not because kind of we pushed you past a point of failure. It all stems in your ability to believe in the I can theory, right? And then basically, as I said to you, the last point around grit is take on goals that scare you. You've heard the phrase kind of, if your goals don't scare you, they're not big enough. And I believe that's factual. And that applies to all areas of life. Do things that scare you, because at the end of that kind of fear, when have you ever done anything that you feared for so long and you've done it and it's the outcome's ever been as bad as you perceived it to be? Never. So kind of do those sort of things, do the difficult, do the hard things, because that's what's going to separate you from most, because there's not many people and you guys are doing the hard things at the moment. So it's continuing that, and that is literally going to build grit. So is grit trainable? Absolutely. So moving on to discipline, I always say discipline is just systems and motivation. So it's not a feeling, okay? It's a structure. So what sort of things go into the structure of discipline? The first one at the top there is self-control. Again, mental discipline is that ability to regulate the impulses and behaviors, even when faced with kind of negative emotions and temptation. The example I use with a client around kind of being with friends and drinking, those sort of things. Think about the most difficult areas of your life that you find. It might be mine was always going to my grandma and granddad's, because my grandma used to love feeding me up. Oh, you look like you've lost a little bit of weight. You look a little bit thin. Oh, let me make you this. Let me make all my favorite foods. And I, again, depending on where I was, like it would be a no thank you. I appreciate it. Try and explain what I'm doing. Falls on deaf ears. The next time I go around, it's the same again. So again, it's putting yourself into those areas, but learning self-control that's going to yield the greatest progression. Focus and concentration. It's again, it allows you to maintain attention on a task or a specific goal. So minimizing distractions, using the working blocks that I've spoken about in previous kind of webinars. Okay, persistence. So mental discipline helps you persevere through difficulties and setbacks. It prevents you from giving up on your goals. Okay, so I've always said, and I do, this is something that before I even knew all about kind of mindset stuff and those sort of things from a younger age, I've always said kind of my phrase has always been, nobody will outwork me. And I'm lucky enough to do a profession that I love, and I've not worked a day in the last 20 years of my life, admittedly. But if I didn't do this job and I did work something, nobody would work harder than me. Again, persistence is something that it's just inbuilt in me in regards to just that more. What's next? What's next? I've naturally always expect more of myself, but I understand with a lot of people that doesn't come naturally. So kind of through difficulties and setbacks, that allows me to keep moving forward. I've said some of the difficult areas of times in my life over the last few years. My persistence has allowed me to kind of walk through them and still showing up for my clients and still showing up for the team and you guys, even when things are out of kilter in personal life. And I think that's important. So persistence is a big one. Goal-orientated thinking, kind of. So for me, that kind of stems around kind of consciously aligning your thoughts and actions to your desired outcomes. So you're trying to lose body fat, but you're having a takeaway every Friday night. That's not goal-orientated thinking. That's consciously moving you further away from your goals. So making sure you align your thoughts and actions with the outcomes that you desire is super important. Okay. And then the last one there, which we spoke about already, is emotional regulation. So mental discipline is going to have a massive role in kind of allowing you to manage your emotional responses. Okay. And avoid and under most importantly, kind of not just avoid being overwhelmed, but understand when things are happening, that when we're kind of embarking on that slippery slope, and having strategies in place of how we kind of pull ourselves back out as well. So kind of, I think kind of discipline is important in all those, everything I've spoke about in the previous slides today. Discipline kind of is one of those things that is a part of everything that was spoken about as well. So when I look at discipline with clients to begin with, what are the biggest kind of levers that we can pull, and can you guys point to practice? I always say The only time that you typically have control, and those of you guys on this call that have young children, forgive me. I'm not talking about you because they get up at the crack of dawn. The only hours that we typically have control over is how we start the day and how we finish the day. Because a lot of the time, the rest of the day is up in the air. We might have a structured working hours, but we can never kind of with any certainty say this, and this. And if you can, then great, but a lot of the time we can't. So there's a lot of uncertainty in the hours outside of first thing in the morning and first thing and last thing at night. So for me, the best discipline tools and some of the best tools are things like morning rituals, your morning routine, your evening routine. Okay. That's going to be pivotal in setting. I always say your morning sets you up for the day, and the evening closes off the day and gets you ready for the next morning. Then you have a restful sleep. We kind of declutter your brain of everything that's gone on. We have a restful sleep. We get up and then we're ready to start the day. So morning routines are super important to me and everybody that I work with. Okay, another good tool for discipline is limit decision making. Okay, so for me, I'm a creature of habits, same meals, same times. I train at the same time every day because that limits the amount of clutter in my brain. If I don't train first thing in the morning and I get doing some work or I get onto my WhatsApp and answer some of the messages from you guys, it takes me off my trail of thought and I get busy doing something else. And before I know it, it's 10 o'clock and my motivation to train is low. So again, limit decision making and where you can create consistency. And the phrase I always use is control what's in your control, right? And most of the things in your life are in your control. So make sure you kind of limit that decision making by controlling them. And then the last point I would guess is something like environmental design. So no distractions, low temptation. I still want you to put yourself into the kind of difficult areas. But if you can create a life where kind of you can create little to no extract distractions that don't serve you and low temptation, then you're into a great position. One of the biggest things for me, my son's back from university, which I'm loving having, but there's no snacks in the house. I don't have snacks in my house, like because I know if there's cookies in the cupboard, I'm eating the cookie. Dad loves the cookie, and I know Gav will love this as well. I love a cookie, so kind of I just don't buy them. So it's low temptation. Low distractions because they're not here. I can't eat them. And I'm not going to make my way all the way to the supermarket because I'd feel guilty as hell driving over to the supermarket just to pick up some cookies. So environmental design is super important. And it's just understanding that when I talk about the morning routine, how important circadian rhythm is, and kind of setting yourself up for success in the morning is super important. So things that you can do to reset that circadian rhythm first thing in the morning is that those kind of early morning routines of trying to get yourself into a position where you go to sleep at the same time every night, where you learn to wake up without a snooze button or an alarm. Get outside and walk first thing in the morning. Those of you guys that are lucky enough to have sun all year round, get some vitamin D and some sun on your skin. Okay, hydrate with electrolytes and water. That's the first thing that you consume in the morning. Set yourself up for success. If you've got the opportunity for cold exposure, jump into some cold exposure. Or if you haven't, something like deep breath work will work. Personally, I like to train and do my mobility. That's it for me. Kind of, we're not blessed with massive amounts of sun here in the UK, although at the moment it's warm. So my first thing in the morning is I get up, hydrate. Kind of do a little bit of kind of journaling to set myself up, get myself set up, kind of a little bit of coffee, then off to the gym. So, and just track these habits and just curate what your kind of morning routine looks like. And I would say, from a kind of discipline standpoint, setting that is going to be vitally important. And then moving on to endurance. So for me, endurance equals resilience. Okay, so I've used this slide to talk a little bit about mitochondrial health. Those of you that have had the pleasure of speaking to Greg, which is most of you guys, you know he's mad on mitochondria and kind of how important it is for kind of circulation and all the kind of factors of longevity and life. And to reduce the risk of mortality. So, kind of, I've used this slide just to talk a little bit about its relationship, endurance's relationship to resilience using mitochondria. So, we know kind of typically your brain is quite a hungry organ, right? So improving that mitochondrial function is going to help reduce things like mental fatigue from a decision-making standpoint. It's going to boost focus drive, and then both focus drive and enhance mood. So it's going to put you into a better position for success. And they all are going to fall into the category of kind of supporting overall performance and resilience. So why is mitochondrial health pivotal for endurance? So energy production. So we know that healthy mitochondria produce more ATP, which is going to typically delay fatigue during exercise and long duration days. It's going to improve fat oxidization. So it again, endurance itself is going to rely on burning fat for fuel. So efficient mitochondria improve the body's ability to oxidize fat. Okay, it's going to typically conserve glycogen and prolonging stamina. So your durability is going to increase, which again, endurance increases, and that resilience and controlling that arousal state increases. It's going to reduce oxidative stress. So exercise will typically increase free radical damage. Okay. And when we do have healthy mitochondria, they're better at managing oxidative stress. So, which in turn is going to have a knock-on effect to reducing things like inflammation and muscle damage, which means what? We're going to recover quicker so we can train harder. We can recover. There's no such thing as overtraining, it's just under recovering. So reducing oxidative stress and by having healthy mitochondria is going to be important. And then essentially enhance recovery. So better mitochondrial function supports faster tissue repair, energy replenishment post-exercise. So both of those last points, and to be fair, all of them, all relate to recovery and durability, which again, we're not just looking at in the scope of exercise. We've got to look at in the scope of resiliency. We've got to look at in regards to grit, discipline, determination, and everything that we're speaking about today. So, understanding the role of the internal aspects, we spoke about the brain, but understanding the main powerhouses of each cell, the mitochondria, is going to be super important. So, in regards to kind of building those energy systems, like kind of what are some of the things that we all know that are kind of pretty much back from science that are going to help induce, help increase endurance, sorry. So we know that most of you do it, your zone two cardio, again, trying to get anywhere up to kind of 3 to 4 hours a week in, again, keeping that heart rate, depending on the individual, anywhere between, let's say, 120 to 140 beats per minute. There's been a little bit of science around, some of you may have heard of it, some not, but things like blood flow restriction training, where you have a cuff and you kind of cuff the limb that you're going to be used and use a special rep range for blood flow restriction. It's been used proficiently to help heal injuries and anybody that kind of can't lift heavy weight because they've got injuries. Blood flow restriction training has been used, but it's also kind of been shown to induce endurance. Sleep, which we know is a big one. So getting enough REM and deep sleep from a hormonal recovery and almost a central nervous reset standpoint is super important. So sleep's always going to be a big needle mover. From a supplementation standpoint, to increase sleep depth, obviously those of you that talked to Greg, magnesium's going to be a big one. We can use things like glycine, but that's going to be specific to the individual. And then something as simple as nasal breathing. Hopefully, those of you guys that are doing zone two cardio, you've been practicing your nasal breathing, or when walking, kind of, and completing your steps, practice nasal breathing because that's going to reduce the oxygen cost, which in turn is going to boost energy efficiency as well. So, endurance and resilience kind of come hand in hand. And then penultimate slide is just the pillars of resistance and high performance. So those of you guys know our kind of resilient four resiliences here at Muscle Intelligence: physical, metabolic, physiological, and psychological. I've just added my own spin on these just for today, but the main core four are that: physical, metabolic, physiological, and psychological. Obviously, we've got physiological and psychological in there. So in regards to resilience itself, we know the physiological is training your nervous system to recover better, okay, and controlling that arousal state that we've spoken about through thought. Psychological, I talk, you've heard me speak a lot now about internal dialogue, belief systems, language use, and mindset, they're all going to be super important factors when it comes to resiliency from a psychological aspect. I've put in there emotional and social today just because we spoke a little bit about social previously up in the slides. So emotional is going to be, I like to use a phrase, kind of build pause before reaction. It increases tolerance. So when we're going through a stressful moment, just take a breath. Take a breath, calm down, and actually understand what's happening and try to understand in that instant what's fact and what's thought. Because quite often, the thoughts that you're thinking don't align with the facts that have just happened. And we make a slingshot or a snapshot decision to say or do something. Might be an argument with your spouse. It might be getting annoyed with the kids and shouting them, and you're like, was it that deep? Typically, no. So the emotional side to resilience is almost build pause before reaction and just take a breath. That's going to increase tolerance. Or if the kids are kicking off, as an example, don't instantly go straight in and kind of bite the heads off. Just kind of build tolerance and then calmly say, right, stop doing that. So that's all going to help massively from a resiliency standpoint, believe it or not. I know you guys, I've got a son, so I'm well versed in this. I'm not just speaking from a kind of science. I've done it myself, so it's fact spoken. And then social, as I said to you earlier, it's just aligning with others. It's just aligning with others and kind of getting yourselves into a position where you're surrounded by excellence. And I don't just mean excellence from a monetary standpoint. I'm talking about excellence in regards to the areas of focus that your means so important to you. It might be fatherhood, it might be travel, it might be family. There's all sorts of different kind of groups that you can be a part of, and try to find yourself in those groups as well, which is super important. And then the last point is high performance protocols. So again, we spoke previously about circadian rhythm optimization. So we spoke about sunlight upon waking, stop eating 3 hours before bed, and most importantly, a consistent bedtime, to add to everything we spoke about a little bit earlier in regards to circadian rhythm optimization. Nervous system reset. So again, the importance of breathing, grounding, if you ever you've done grounding. So if you are going out for a walk in the garden in the morning, preferably not on a street, kind of if you've got any grass around you, shoes and socks off, and kind of be at one with the energy of the earth. Kind of ground, I like, kind of, I don't wear shoes very often. I know Ben loves grounding as well. So if you can ground, and cold exposure. Okay. And then the last one there, I think my clickers in the way, is hormone optimization. Okay, so hormone optimization for me is, again, going a little bit deeper into the science, but it's just understanding testosterone, estrogen, DHT conversion. Okay, so in a resiliency context, we know that kind of any excess aromatization, especially men with higher body fat, can lead to things like mood swings, low libido, decreased motivation. So also in the same effect, kind of anybody with low DHT, if you've seen it on your blood test, or impaired 5-A reductase activity. So 5-A reductase is the enzyme that converts testosterone into DHT. That could all poor 5-A reductase or low DHT can lead to poor energy and reduced drive and aggression in a healthy adaptive sense as well. Okay, so from a hormone optimization standpoint, that's super important. As you've heard Ben speak quite a lot, what are sort of things we can do to maintain healthy testosterone, resistance training, sleep, managing stress and perception of stress, to limit kind of excess aromatization, get leaner, so reduce a lot more of that visceral fat that sits around this middle area here. Okay, look at natural aromatase inhibitors. So things like zinc is a great supplement. Things like DIM. Make sure you're eating your cruciferous vegetables. So your green vegetables is going to be super important. They're all going to be natural aromatase inhibitors. And then we can support that 5-A reductase with things like kind of zinc again, and adequate amounts of saturated fats, which has got a knock-on effect because it's going to help support 5-A reductase, but it's also going to support the brain because we know the brain is a large organ and its preferred fuel source is going to be fats as well. So there's a few things that we can do around building resiliency and just around those kind of high performance protocols there. And then lastly for today, I've just put a little quote on there to finish, and hopefully it's shone through throughout this slideshow. It's just your identity drives your outcome. Okay, be the type of man who does the hard things. Okay, your behavior is going to flow from the identity. So for me, raise your standards. You are all amazing men that listen to this and are part of this amazing community, but we're all continually trying to raise those standards. So be that guy. And it's just a case of kind of stop. Quite often, a lot of men that I speak to try to negotiate with weakness. That's not an option. Okay. Stop negotiating with weakness. Do the hard things, and every single day do something that challenges you or you fear. So step into that and kind of feel that feeling of success and do the hard things, because it's the hard things, the hard places is where we will typically grow. So kind of lead your family, lead your business, lead your body, and be I talk about it a lot, the patriarch of your family, but the pioneer of change. I talk a lot about being kind of being a leader, the patriarch of your family, and just make sure that you kind of hold that to task and lead from the front. So that's me for today, guys. So off the back of that, thank you for listening. Has anybody got any questions off those slides? Please feel free to speak up. All good, Rob? I won't ask you to speak. You look like your heart rate's probably closer to the 140 range there, mate. So you're doing everything that I've asked you to do to build that resilience. So thank you. How are you, John? I saw you sneaking. How are you, buddy?
I'm good.
Yeah. How did you find that, mate?
Oh, that's good. I was
Yeah. Are you getting on okay?
I feel like I make progress every day, so.
Good. Good. And that's the most important thing. It's again, it says marginal gains, right? It's just being 1% better in one area of your life, kind of every single day.
I just feel like I show up and that's my job.
Yes, 100%, mate. 100%. Showing up can sometimes be the hardest part as well. So for me, kind of, it's understanding that balance between showing up, but also being hard on yourself as well, and just understanding if you're showing up, that's part of the job. But then from that showing up, it's action in that as well, right?
Right.
Yeah. But great to see you on, mate. Thank you for joining me today. And Vamchi, I haven't seen you for a while, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, mate. It's great to see your face. How's
Yes.
things?
Yeah. Things are good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
How was that for you? Is there anything in particular you took from that, or anything that I can help you with?
No, actually, I've been recently getting attracted to this word grit. So I
Yeah.
just wanted to do, because see, that's what I'm doing right now. It's raining. But I still have to finish my steps. So I
Yeah.
said, let me go out. Right? So negotiation is not an option for me.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
100%. And quite often, and that's one of the biggest points I think from the slides, is often we choose we have we do know get negotiate with ourselves, and we waste so much time, kind of, I wouldn't say it's procrastination, it's trying to argue the toss. I'm too busy, I haven't got time. I think I haven't got time, not this is not you personally, I think this is in general, it's the biggest fad ever. Kind of, and again, I always do it with my clients with a 16-hour audit, is kind of everybody's got time. And but again, it goes back to what we say in regards to identity, purpose, values, and just understanding your goals. And I mean, seeing you in Costa Rica last year, the changes you'd made from November 2023 to November 24, that's testament to you doing the hard shit, right? That's testament to you kind of sticking with a plan and kind of doing your thing, which you're doing a fantastic job of, mate. So yeah, it's great to see you on here. It's been a while since I've seen you.
And I just wanted to highlight one thing that you mentioned that actually stuck to me, the decision making, right? I know that decision making is very
Yeah.
energy draining, right? So one thing that I've been put to practice this year is going to gym, right? Every day in the morning, I don't make the decision. It is already made, right? Yeah, there might be a snow day, a rain day. I just have to make some small decision, but that actually is out of my mind. The decision is already made. And every
Yeah.
time you give a chance to make the decision,
Yeah.
there is chances to slip off.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. You're totally right. I always use a phrase, kind of don't give yourself the ability to think. I often use it around food with clients, is when you go to an empty fridge, like prepare your food, because the minute that you have to make a choice with food, and this is past history with clients, typically you make the wrong choice. If you get the option of the kid's chocolate bar or a stick of broccoli, normal human reaction from a pleasure and sensation is going to be drawn to the chocolate bar. So it's the same with training, it's the same with everything. Take the choice out of it. But I talk so much about scheduling and structure and kind of itemizing everything. And there's got to be an air of flexibility in your life when you've got kids and those sort of things. And I get that. But going back to my phrase in the talk was control what's in your control. And there's so many factors in all of our lives that we can control. And if you control those and leave the variability in the other areas, that leaves room for maneuver. And for me, just taking control of that, and as you said, taking it isn't a choice, it isn't a decision now. It's already the decision's already made. It's a commitment that you've made to yourself to be better. And that's what I'm going to hold on. And that's what I was talking about in regards to hold yourself to a higher standard. Hold just commit to being better, not just for yourself, but for your friends, your family, your spouse, your children. As we said with kids, kind of the role of being a father, and not just a father, but in any sort of interpersonal relationship, as a son, as a brother or a sister, like being the leader of change. And I talk a lot about generational change because my son's just come back from university as of last week. He's done his 3 years. I went to pick him up. He's the first person in my family that's ever been to university. And the fact that I've empowered, I would like to think I've had a role and a responsibility in empowering him enough to believe that he has the ability to succeed in that. Like for me, it's amazing. And it is just, we quite often as humans, we just allow time to pass and we don't, pardon my French, grab life by the balls. And change is hard. Changing stuff that we've been inbuilt in when it comes to kind of psychology is very difficult. Like when we've been indoctrinated with certain types of parents, not bad, not good, not bad, but kind of change is difficult. But once you commit to change and you make it, you've seen and you've reaped the rewards of that. And I think everybody that I speak to, I was lucky enough to speak to a couple of Greg's clients today, and they're doing the same. So yeah, it's great to hear, mate. It's great to hear.
Thank you.
Right, guys. Well, thank you very much for kind of spending an hour with me today. It's always greatly appreciated for those of you guys that do make the time to come onto the call. I appreciate your time. Those of you guys that do listen back to this, as always, if you do have any questions around anything I present or any questions you want to ask me, obviously you can drop me a message, kind of ask the questions in the group. The Men's Collective group on WhatsApp or Telegram and those sort of things. But any questions, let me know. But again, to those of you guys that are here, those of you guys that are going to listen to this on repeat, thank you very much for your time. And I look forward to speaking to all you guys again soon. Take care.